Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am not Jason Snell. I'm your break glass in case of emergency international travel guest host, David J. Lohr from the 812. And I'm here to help keep the streak alive with the chief TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I love the fact that, David, that you're filling in and that we can make this happen. This is the first time you and I have actually talked, which is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm an old school listener from the original Talk Machine. So, you know, I've been listening to you all the time.
Yeah, see, you got the radio pipes, though. You got that good radio voice. I'm kind of like, I don't know what, somewhere that if there was somebody in the sound booth,
if we had a sound booth,
like, can we get a guy who's got like a better voice? Plus, I'm sick, and that probably throws it off a little bit. But yeah, you got the golden pipes, David.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's funny. We did one of the radio theater shows. I did one of the voices, and I met up with Jason last summer in San Diego, and we go to this restaurant, and he hands me the menu, and you know, he's pointing out stuff because he's been there several times, and I go, ooh, that sounds really good. And he just started laughing. I said, what? He said, you're doing the voice. You're doing the Orson Welles voice. I'm like, oh, son of a... And I couldn't stop. Then the rest of the day, it was like every now and then something would come out and he'd just start chuckling.
That reminds me of the old TV Talk Machine days when we were doing, Joe Garofoli was Question Boy, and he and I would do Bill Walton all the time. It got to be a point where I could not be doing Walton. I would do it like 24 hours a day.
Oh, I was doing it here too.
Yeah,
it's
crazy.
I have it in reserve if need be.
Okay, that's good. So,
but we'll try and be informative, you know, blow the listeners' minds.
Yes.
So yeah, we've got a list of stuff. It's been kind of a weird week in TV news.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the map, I think.
Yeah.
This week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess we could go in chronological order.
Sure.
The Daily Show story. The Daily Show is a new host, and that's the least interesting thing,
right? I mean, that was really interesting because it's one of those things. You know, I was talking about like deadlines with my son, and you know, he's pretty young, and he was like, "God, you got a lot of deadlines, and you're up and down." And anytime he's around or pops in, I'm kind of on a deadline. Mm-hmm. And I was explaining to him, like, yeah, and sometimes you don't expect it, like Monday. Nobody really expected that the Trevor Noah announcement was going to be made. So that was me scrambling on Monday to put something together, put it into perspective. I didn't even – he was never even on my radar as a potential candidate. I don't think he was on anybody's radar, really.
Yeah.
So that was all news. We're putting that together. And then, of course, later as the day unfolded and into the evening, BuzzFeed and others were looking at his Twitter feed, and that whole thing exploded. And I laughed because the next day, you know, I teach a class at a college, a visual studies class, and I had to leave. Like, I had to catch the bus. And my boss was like, hey, we want you to do this whole thing. Like, we were reading all your tweets last night about comedy and those big picture items. And we want you to do a whole thing about Trevor Noah and, you know, the comedy club versus Twitter feed. And I was like, do it after 4 o'clock, but I can't do it now. So yeah, so it was kind of started off this week a little bit busy, but the Trevor Noah thing, well, now I think it's kind of died down unless I'm not online and haven't seen something blow up. But I think everybody kind of hashed it out, and we'll still see. I think the thing that comes, whether, you know, I think that there was a great look at, well, everything, obviously, you know. Was this anti-Semitic? Was it funny? I think there was a general agreement. None of the stuff was funny.
Right.
You know, I mean, some people, I guess, maybe thought it was funny. It was just, and then it was like, oh my God, is he funny enough to be the host? Before, it was just a shock. Like, who is this guy? And then I looked into it, you know, there's a lot of different issues, which I think were kind of interesting on the topic. But the more I looked into it, I was like, boy, you know what? I wonder if during the process of selection, I won't say vetting because I'm not sure they did vetting, but I wonder in the process of selection if they ever sat this guy down and had him be in the chair, because unless they're not going to have a chair, there's that possibility, because I think the whole Daily Show can be revamped around him. But, you know, you know, just to think like, oh, can this guy do it? Then you extrapolate and say, can he actually sit in the chair and actually be a host? I mean, they're different traits. You can be stand up all you want, but if you're sitting in the chair being a host, you really have to be like a short order cook.
That's right. I, you know, it's funny. I lived in the town, maybe one town over from where Jon Stewart grew up. And at some point they opened up a Catch a Rising Star right nearby. Mm-hmm. And so after he had hit, and I think his MTV show was done and he was just about to do the show that like replaced Arsenio.
Oh, right.
He came back to town and did a set and then introduced a whole bunch of other comics. And, you know, if you had told me that night that this was going to be someone important in, you know, humor and politics and being a watchdog and, you know, and I know it's a joke that people, you know, all millennials get their news from The Daily Show. Mm. And, well, honestly, that's probably where I get most of my news. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have to know the news to get the jokes. I mean, you can't just get all your information from it.
Right.
And if you had told me that guy was going to go on to do this, I'd have said, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to let him do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can look at this and say, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see what happens and see what happens when he has writers.
Right. I mean, that's pretty key. I mean, because even somebody like Stewart, I mean, clearly Stewart has got a whole staff of writers. The guy, he's one of the sharpest guys on his feet I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, that's saying something. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that Noah really has to be all that we're putting on him. We already know he can't be Stewart. That's like a one-of-a-kind talent. But you make a really good point. Like, we're seeing this guy at a very young age, and you got to give him a few years. Or maybe not a few years, because then by then it's too much. But you've got to give him some time to acclimate to the chair. But you know what? It's funny. It's because it's like if people were questioning whether – Comedy Central made the right decision, you know, on Monday, then by Tuesday, it's just, I think people will watch no matter what. I think people will come back unless they were seriously offended. But I think it's just a heightened sense of like, can he do it or not? There's something like, even if it's just a notch up or two, David, I think that people are attuned to, they're going to be really watching him. And I'm not sure that benefits him.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I feel the aching loss of the Colbert Report as mm-hmm. much as I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what he does when he's not leashed to a character.
Sure.
But I think the thought of losing both Jon Stewart and quote unquote Stephen Colbert in the course of a year, you know, that's going to raise it even more where it's like, well, who are the new people who are going to watch out for these things?
Right, right. And I, you know, it's funny because I do like Larry Wilmore's. I like the nightly show.
Yeah.
And I think it's working out. The kinks as it goes. But that doesn't mean I don't miss the Colbert Report. You know, it's like it's not there. The rapport is gone. And I kind of want it back. So, and now we're in this holding pattern until we get them,
yeah.
Which is going to be, you know, I'm usually not somebody who's super excited about watching somebody at late night. But boy, I really want to watch that. I think I'll be more connected to late night hosts than I have since sort of the golden years of Letterman, you know?
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I don't get misty at things. I don't cry at stuff. You mm-hmm. know, I didn't. Old Yeller, nothing.
And, wow.
You know, I got to the finale of the Colbert Report and just, I mean, as more and more people poured out onto that stage to join in on the song, and I'm choking up, and my 13-year-old looks at me and goes, are you crying? And I said, aren't you? And he looks and goes, well, yeah, kind of, you know.
That's tremendous. So. That's tremendous. Yeah. That certainly started our week off, didn't it?
Yeah. So.
And we don't even know when Stewart's yet. I don't think there's an exit date
yet. I don't think he's named one.
So it was all the timing was all very odd. And so I think that threw us a curveball for the week.
Yeah. And then the week got weird again. Well, do you want to go on to the other late night talk show host?
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, we've got a week of James Corden.
Mm-hmm.
And this will actually tie into a listener feedback later.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
But I'll save that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as you said last time out, this is not this is not a sprint. This is a marathon.
Right.
So you can't just judge from the first day or the first week. But you know, what impressions do you have so far?
You know, I think he's getting more comfortable every day. You know, I still don't know if in 6 months we're going to see that set look the same. I think that that whole April Fool's joke with Katie Couric falling down the stairs. I mean, it's funny because some people say, oh, he really got him. And I think the reason you got him, because as he did say a little bit in the clip, if you ever watched it all the way through, is that they've been talking about those stairs. Like, is this a good idea? Should we move these? And if that's in the back of your mind and somebody trips, you're thinking, oh God, right. We should have done it before this happened.
Yeah.
Because they were nagging doubts in their mind. And so I think that really got him. But I do think that he's a guy who can kind of roll with things. And I kind of like the couch idea, you know, again, obviously it's been done, Graham Norton, but I do like to see them all on the couch. And there's part of me that's like, oh, okay, that's kind of an interesting collection of people on the couch. That makes me want to, for some reason, and this, you know, I think, David, you and I agree that a lot of times where there's so much in late night right now that you can just find all the good stuff virally. It's going to be in your Twitter feed or something, and it's going to be, you're going to find everything, you know. Fallon just did some great dance thing or whatever, and you're gonna see it. Or there was a band, you can find it. And so that's how generally I find all the good bits. But there's something about the couch thing where I'm almost thinking, hey, I would actually stick with this and watch this in a way that I might not somewhere else. Because you're like, okay, they got three guests, they got two coming up, but to have them all kind of there at the same time is different enough to keep me watching in real time.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because, I mean, that's what Jack Parr and Johnny Carson used to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm old enough and had indulgent enough parents enough that I got to stay up and watch Carson a lot.
Uh-huh. Right.
And, you know, and it was great because they would all, you know, I mean, yeah, they'd focus on the guest who was in the chair, but the others were there and they could interact.
Oh, yeah, that wide angle, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And I think it was Letterman when Late Night started that sort of started the trend of, you know, one guest – and you leave.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I kind of miss that. So yeah, in fact, the one thing that's frustrating to me watching this week has been when they come back to do a bit. And it's like, no, I want to see them on the couch. I want to stop playing games. I don't want to do the games.
Right.
You know, so, we've got Jimmy Fallon. He can do the games.
Right. So what's your impression been so far of the first outgoing, first week?
I like him. I like him. I can see how he might be a little too jolly for some people, a little too friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I kind of like it. I like that he's very earnest. And he does, you know, he's got all these skills.
He does.
You know? I mean, just the first night with the recreating Tom Hanks' entire career.
Oh, yeah.
In, what, 6 minutes or 7 minutes? And no setup for that. Just, we're going to do it. Boom, and it keeps going and going and going, and you think they're gonna stop. They're not gonna do all the movies. They did all the movies, you know.
That's amazing.
So you know, having just complained about doing bits, that was a good bit. you know, and they've got good people involved. It's a little weird to see the set.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, I think the sponsorship from InBev, Anheuser-Busch InBev, is a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely a new era thing.
But you know, hey, if it works, it works.
And I like him. I think it. You know, I'm with you on that he is jolly and a happy-go-lucky guy. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
because he's not like I said in my review. He's not quite as goofy as Fallon. And I like Fallon too, but he's not as quite as goofy as that. So you know. I don't want somebody to be cynical anymore. We got our cynical guys. I'm right. Fine with that. Yeah.
Right. Now the whole shift from desk to couch. It's like, you don't need the desk. Don't do the desk.
Mm-hmm.
Be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that's something they got to work out. That and the staircase.
Yeah, the staircase was. I just never thought that was a good idea.
No.
I mean, you could have a fall. You can tell that some people don't want to do it, they're like, don't touch me. You know, just like, who are you crazy fans? You know, I don't want to do that. But let's give it a little bit of time to breathe, and they'll make their changes. I bet those stairs go, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not too long. I mean, it was sort of interesting to see Late Night with Seth Meyers change their set so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was only a couple of months, and suddenly they had a brand new, totally turned around set,
mm-hmm.
flipped everything.
Well, so. I think that they need to tinker, right? I mean, no matter how much time that they have to work it out, it's, I don't know, there's something about like seeing it night after night with all the guests and the cameras working, not just like a practice session. But in use, you can say, you know what, this isn't going to work out. And that's good. I that's why we don't do the reviews. And I think that it's like, okay, you know what? It's like moving into your new place. You got to move the furniture around a little bit to make sure, get the feng shui working.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's something that when they first announced him, and I said, what are you doing? You've got this great career doing all this other stuff. Why do you want to do this? And I think it was your thing last time talking with him and saying that, you know, well, this is... this actually lets me be more creative more often and get it all out there. And I don't have to wait. I don't have to, mm-hmm. you know, do like two things in a year. I can do 50 weeks of show in a year.
Yeah.
And that clicked. I was like, yes, of course. That's mm-hmm. why I'm doing what I'm doing over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's exactly what I was thinking. Like, I guess it was so obvious. I didn't even think about it. I'm like, oh, I guess you're right. You know, because it just, it was rewarding, but not rewarding enough for him to do the movies and stuff. And I loved the shows he's been in some great TV shows. He's got a pretty big tool bag. Yeah. Wrong Man's is so fun. And, but he's got a very large toolbox to work with. So, and I think he can do that every night, and he's going to be stoked to do it.
Oh yeah, I mean last night's show, he just hijacked some person's house down the road, and did the whole thing from the house.
That's great. See, I didn't see last night.
You know, and that reminded me of things like the Late Night with David Letterman anniversary show where they did the entire thing from a plane,
mm-hmm.
or the 360 degree episode, or the dentist's chair episode, or.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's just it's funny. The more you look at some of these things, and you just realize. The Letterman, he was just sort of the master of it.
Oh yeah,
you know, and he's like, I don't know. Every time I watch him now, I feel like he's just trying to go home.
the other night he did a Billy on the Street segment,
right?
Which, you know, and Billy was tweeting saying, you know, this inspired me. He did this, and he never goes out of the studio, and he came out of the studio with me, and I hadn't realized how much I missed that until I saw it.
Yep,
I was like,
Yeah, there's some wacky stuff from the old school. Like, you know, remember that one, can a bear get into a club, and where the bear on? Those were great. That's such a great idea. Even just dropping stuff off the roof was always a great idea. Rolling it down something down the street. You know, I don't know.
My son got into a YouTube wormhole a couple of months ago where he was going through all the old late night clips, not even old late show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think it was the Taco Bell drive through. where he's there on the other end, and he's saying, could you just order like two extra burritos there for me, but I can't buy them myself, and just, you know, all the reactions of people, and we've been quoting that one ever since.
Yeah, he was kind of the master at that. Yeah. And I look at that and I'm like, okay, who's changed more, him or because I look at it and I'm like, you know, I remember when I couldn't wait to see these shows. And now maybe I'm just tired old hag, but like I just like, oh, okay, send me the link to that one, that viral video. But I don't know, I think when you watch it live, you kind of have that, you know, that the thrill of sort of discovery. And now these days I'm just overwhelmed with so much stuff.
Oh yeah,
well, there's just more boring.
Yeah, there is so much. Man, well, have we exhausted that one?
I think so.
Let's go on to short run shows. I was looking at your Twitter feed the other day, mm-hmm. or yesterday, and you were talking about shows like American Crime and Secrets and Lies.
Right.
That, you know, I can mention these to my wife and she says, "What?
Yeah.
What are those?" And you
it's hard.
You know what? What do you think the shelf life is for these? I mean, I've always liked the British system where you have 6 episodes, mm-hmm. and that's your season, mm-hmm. and it lets you focus, and it lets you have like a smaller writing staff or even just one writer, and you get this really condensed, distilled show,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so I've been wanting that for years over here, and now we're getting them, but they're all kind of overly serious and drab, and I don't know what.
Well, definitely overly serious, David. I think that's one of them, because I was thinking the same thing too. You know, like I was when I was doing on Twitter was sort of just throwing up a flare there, a trial balloon, and saying like, is anybody watching these shows anymore? Because I actually liked American Crime to a certain extent. I mean, it's deathly serious.
Yeah,
you know, and I think if you take yourself that serious, and speaking of which, I'm about to review American Odyssey, which was just Odyssey until they changed it to American Odyssey. I have no idea, but it's also like a short run series that's like super, super serious, and you're just like, oh, really? But then that's too much. And then there was The Slap, which I think was just, it wasn't that it was too serious, it was just ridiculous.
Well, apparently in the finale, I mean, this is maybe not the way you want to leave the sort of subtext of your show, is to have it culminate in a court case where the judge says, you are all horrible people, and you have wasted all of our time with this court case. And you go, but I just watched all of, well, she's right. Damn it!
Right. And it was, I saw people tweeting about that they had to watch the ending, and they got all the way through the end, and then that they were disappointed. And I was like, you know what? I could have told you that from watching the pilot, which is exactly what I did. It's like, you can see that stuff coming. That's going nowhere. And it's just, I don't know. People who stick with it, it's kind of amazing in these times that we live in when they have so many opportunities. But I was thinking, like, I think it really is I think it's a two-pronged thing, David. Like, I think that I'm glad that we have these short-run shows, these limited-run shows, because I think that's definitely the future.
Yeah.
But I also just think they're coming at a time when we have so many options, and that plays into it. But that can't be the only thing. So maybe it's just all of them seem to be very serious or very dour. You've got Secrets and Lies, you've got a murdered kid, and everybody's got all these deep, dark secrets that are, it's kind of depressing to weed through it. And then you've got The Slap, which was just annoying from jump. And then American Crime, which is, oh God, you've got racism and everything in that. It's just hateful, that show. And the characters are so, they're so strident that it's kind of an effort to put into that. So I'm thinking, wow, maybe it's just that was the bad choice. And not so much that we're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And then I look back and I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe I have a predilection to like, I mean, because The Missing is pretty dark, but it was just, it didn't feel like it was an effort to watch it. It was crisply moving through those episodes. And it could just be that, you know, at the end of the day, these shows, they weren't up to snuff. And that in a world where you've got the Americans and Justified and all these other things that are coming up and stuff that's on Netflix, you have to be really good to sustain people's attention.
Yeah. Well, and you have to have characters that are, you know, it can't, like American Crime is unremittingly grim. I mean, who do you want to follow on that show? The story might be really interesting, but I don't care. I love Felicity Huffman. Oh. I don't want to watch this.
Yeah.
You know, whereas The Americans is serious, and it's you know, it can be grim, but there's a little bit of fun, and there's a little bit of you know, you kind of root for them almost despite yourself.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's just, you know, look at limited run shows. Two of the things that I'm teaching this semester were we're currently watching Fargo. I mean, that's kind of how you do it. And then we watched The Honorable Woman prior, along with True Detective. So all kind of masters of the short form. And you always wanted to get through it. There was something about it that had a hook. And it wasn't just, neither one of them were, they were varied enough. I think really it's about pacing. And you know this from the theater world. If the pacing's off anywhere, it's gonna bog down.
Yeah. And the nice thing with Fargo was you had a lot of variation from episode to episode.
Yes.
You had... I mean, there'd be a tone or a theme or, you know, just something. And but it was also just so creative. I mean, maybe it was a budgetary thing, and I've said this on other podcasts before, but that sequence where Billy Bob goes through the building on a killing rampage, and you right. don't see any of it. You just see flashes in the windows as he goes through. That's brilliant filmmaking.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. They, you know. There was really no missteps in the making of that. And, you know, you can't say that for these other ones. It's like, and a part of it is like, part of my spirit is like, you know, I kind of want the networks to get into more cable fare that's going to bring people in. And American Crime was super ambitious. I don't want the networks to not be ambitious.
Right.
But there's something in the tone where they're, you know, I had tweeted out that it's hard to watch Felicity Huffman be so good at being incredibly unlikable that you're like, do I really want to follow this woman for 10 weeks or however? Yeah, I was done with her. I was thinking to myself, oh, please don't ever play someone like that again. I love you, Felicity Huffman. Please don't do that. Please be anything. Be any character you've ever been in the past, but not that woman.
Oh, I mean, if I had to pick like 5 TV moments to take with me to a desert island, her dancing to Boogie Shoes on Sports Night, that would be one of them. And
yeah,
it was like, no, I don't want to see this anymore.
Yeah, don't want to see this dour racist that she's playing right now, who, by the way, just looks like all the blood's been sucked out of her. She's looking like a vampire. Oh, it's so bad. Yeah. So maybe, we got it. It was very serious.
Maybe it needs vampires.
Yeah, everything needs vampires.
Vampires, no and doubt. Zombies.
Hey! You know, I was thinking that earlier today. It was just like, the networks are known for ripping people off. Why hasn't a network really done a zombie thing yet?
Yeah.
Are you $20 million for the finale of The Walking Dead?
Which is
Are you kidding
nuts.
Me? Yeah.
I mean, I've watched it. I don't get it, but okay. You know, it's gory. Sure, yeah. But, oh my God, that show pisses me off. Anyway, hi. Resetting.
All right.
I mean, I guess you have iZombie.
Right, there's a zombie, but that's,
you know,
light.
But that
kind
just
of light.
Started, and yeah, it's light. It's not grim the way Walking Dead.
There was Zombie Nation or Z Nation, and that never worked out.
Yeah, yeah, and we have Fear the Walking Dead coming.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that'll have the after show. Hear the Talking Dead. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got to be an after show.
Dateline, the real Walking Dead.
Oh my God, this is not a disaster. Dateline for the Blacklist, the real Blacklist.
Why?
I can't even believe that's a show. I can't even believe somebody actually dreamt that up and pitched it.
Oh my God. Well, so last night we're sitting here watching, and it was one of those, you know, very old school Thursday nights where we don't even touch the remote. We're not even really paying attention. We just sort of leave CBS on to watch comedies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I've already mentioned, I've already made fun of revivals to the kids, right? You know, yes. The X-Files is coming, and
right.
and Coach is coming back because, you know, we need closure on the Hayden Fox story,
right?
And, you know, and then the story about Full House coming back as Fuller House, and so my son and I, my older son and I, start making fun of, you know, well, all the other TGIF shows, you know, you have Going More Places and Extended Family Matters, and, you know, it's endless. You could do this. And so we watch Big Bang Theory. We watch The Odd Couple. And 9 o'clock, there's a Big Bang Theory rerun because they don't have enough good new shows to fill the time, I guess.
Right.
And he goes, wait a minute. Is this a Big Bang rerun? I said, yeah. He goes, oh man, they've brought back the Big Bang Theory. Awesome.
They've already redone it.
So,
yeah, yeah. This whole streak of those things, it's so perplexing to me. It's like every time I keep thinking like, well, I can't comment on that because clearly that's not true. Like I did not believe the Coach news for a while. I thought that's some, you know, we're gonna
that's
get
early
all
April
up.
Fools, yeah.
Yeah, and it's gonna say we're gonna get everybody's gonna get no lather, and then somebody's saying, no, that's not happening. But like and more, who wanted more Full House? I'm sorry, I didn't see all the raised hands.
Yeah.
Right?
And on Netflix of all things. I mean, I expect that from the networks. Mm-hmm. But this is the brave new world. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, I do not know. Like I honestly think that I'm ready to do like a sit down and try to do a paper where I'm trying to figure out like what is Netflix doing and why? I mean, I get some of it. Some of the stuff is just clearly that they're you know, the Marco Polo was, that was pretty obvious. They needed an international audience, right, something that will translate. You know, you've got fighting and you've got nudity, and those translate worldwide, and you've got an international cast. I get that. That's a business decision. That show will run, and people from all different countries will watch it. But like Full House, what the hell?
Yeah, and it's I don't think it's even on Netflix already. I know it's on Amazon Prime, but I mean, it's just weird.
I don't even know why it's on at all. I mean, seriously, like it's the world we live in is a time crunch. Who has time in their lives to watch a Full House?
Yeah,
I mean that is wow.
My kids, you know, I don't know how sophisticated their TV viewing is in general. I mean, they watch what's on, and then they watch stuff on their own. But they're watching a lot of YouTube,
mm-hmm,
you know, they're watching a lot of stuff online. They're playing games. And every now and then, like, you know, we go on a trip and we caught an episode of Full House on Nickelodeon like 2 years ago or 3 years, mm-hmm, ago. And both of them, now they've seen the Brady Bunch. They've seen,
right,
I'll watch the classic shows and say, here, at the very least, you need to get cultural references when you're watching Mystery Science Theater, right?
Right, exactly.
And, you know, so they've watched it and they go, eh, it's corny, but it's cute. And we watched Full House, just killing time in the hotel once, and both of them are like, people made this? This was serious?
Yeah.
People actually watched this?
Like, yeah. It's kind of the dark days of modern television, is what that is.
Yeah.
It's like, really? That was the level of hackiness that existed until we got into this new golden age? Like, yeah, I guess people did make bad shows like that. So I don't get it. I don't know why anybody would want to go back to that. Like, I feel like that if you were to divide your life into available hours and you did like a huge spreadsheet, there's just no time for it. And so I would be going back to watch things that I haven't watched. And I haven't even watched there's stuff that's on Netflix that people are talking about. Like there's Peaky Blinders and what is that one? Is it Black Mirror? What is that one?
Oh, yeah, Black Mirror.
Black Mirror. I haven't watched it. So I'm out of the loop on that. So if I'm going to go back and like, oh, I have, you know, like in this dream world where I have like extra hours, those would be the shows I would watch. It wouldn't be goddamn Full House. Jesus.
Yeah.
Check that mark, right? We got the swear word out now. So that's good.
Awesome. I didn't do it for once.
Yeah, really.
Oh, man, they have to edit so many swears out of The Incomparable. Anyway. We cut the cable years ago, and so I get the over-the-air stations, and we're kind of in the middle of nowhere. We're near Louisville, Kentucky. That's our TV mm-hmm. market,
right?
And so we get the networks, and then they have their extra digital stations, and so they all have, you know, Antenna TV and Me TV and all these, you know, that are basically what Nick at Night and TV Land used to be.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. All the old stuff. You know, your 8 o'clock block on Me TV is Mayberry RFD, so it's kind of odd.
Yeah,
and you know, so I am watching shows that I wouldn't normally choose to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need to watch The Adventures of Superman anymore. I saw it when I was 8, and it was fine.
Right,
and now I go, ah, that's cardboard. Sweet. But like I said, I'm watching them with the kids every now and then to say, you know, okay, you need to know this. You need to be aware of this. And,
right.
And they do have things like The Twilight Zone and Taxi and The Bob Newhart Show and Cheers. And, you know, so there's good stuff too.
Yeah, there's some of that. I'm certainly like the anthology stuff like The Twilight Zone. I think never is going to get old.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Antenna TV. I mean, I have some of the DVDs of Barney Miller and, Antenna TV has been showing that and WKRP, and the kids are hooked.
Wow.
You know, how can you not like WKRP?
Right.
And mm-hmm. and they said, why didn't this go on longer? Why, you know, and I said, because it had 41 different time slots in 4 years. It was nuts. I think it was only like 12, but still.
Yeah, still, you knew the schedules. You were like already critiquing the flow of the scheduling.
Oh, my
flows.
God.
Yeah,
when,
that's
when
awesome.
Let's see. I guess it was about 8 or 9 when it came on, and at that point I poured over TV Guide every week. I had my red pen and I would circle what I was going to watch for the week.
Really? That's tremendous.
And I would analyze things. I mean, I always knew I was going to be a writer, but there's part of my brain that wanted to be Brandon Tartikoff, So I would analyze the schedules and say, okay, this is not going to work, and this should go with this show. And it would be fun when they'd, you know, October and November would roll around, they'd rejigger the schedules, and I'd say, I predicted that, and I'm 10, you know, this is wrong, this is weird. So that's always been in the back of my head each year. It's like, you know, oh, that's not going to work. What are you going to do?
Wow.
It's like NBC with comedy. What the hell?
Yeah, what the hell?
What's going on there?
Well, I'm the opposite of you because I didn't watch hardly any TV when I was a kid, and here I am. Here I am talking about scheduling, rejiggering for a living. It wasn't what I expected, but, you know, that pro baseball career just didn't work out. So.
Well, you know, you and Fidel.
Right. Very similar. Very similar to us, too. Man.
I mean, are there any of these revivals that you are looking forward to?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the Twin Peaks will be interesting, and I think X-Files will be interesting. Although, I'm interested in X-Files in a nostalgic kind of way.
Right.
I still think that redoing the X-Files in a modern way, you know, without, you know, Mulder and Scully, or a new version of them with different actors, I still think that's a great way to go. But now you're not going to get that with now that you've got sort of this one where they're coming back. So I'll watch that. I mean, that to me is nostalgia. As a show, that was one of the very, you know, that was one of the very first shows where I was super hooked on that, and loved that mythology and learning about that. And so that's good. I honestly think that both of those shows that I'm looking forward to have the most likelihood for being a letdown. I just do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think back to season two of Twin Peaks.
Right, exactly.
Or even the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, those are the pitfalls that lie ahead for that. And, you know, I can't, in my brain, I just don't even allow for the idea that the coach will ever actually get made, you know? So I don't even, like, until it comes across my desk, this is always my working philosophy, until it comes across my desk, I'm not gonna worry about it. So you can cast it. Take all your THR casting news. Take all your THR announcements of like who's packaging whatever comeback. Whatever. Talk to me in a year and a half when it's on my desk. That's how I look at it.
It'll be like the Deadwood films of sitcoms.
Right.
Yeah.
Although in this time, you know, I'm getting that coach thing. It's gonna come across the desk. It will be made. But no such luck on the Deadwood movies. No, that's not happening.
I mean, I will say I watched Coach when it started, and it was, you know, it was fine. It was inoffensive. It was, you know, it one of the biggest, dumbest laughs I think I ever had was because, you know, the theme song was a very traditional college fight song sounding song. And I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years into the run, they did a bit where they're at some kind of banquet and they say, hey, let's all sing the Screaming Eagles fight song. And they start up, and it's the theme song, and you go, all right, that makes sense. And they start singing the lyrics, and you think, oh, this is great. When the Screaming Eagles take the field, la-da-da-da-da-da-da, and everybody does the la-da-da-da. Nobody else knows the rest of the words. Dumb joke, but it worked. It
was like, very good.
I like
very
that.
Good.
And then I stopped watching.
See?
Because that was it. It never topped.
It hit its peak. Yeah.
And then it was on for, you know, 5 more years.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because I've talked about this a lot. I have very little institutional knowledge about television because I watched so little of it. Even stuff in the before I became a critic, TV critic, I was a music critic, and I really didn't watch TV much.
Right.
So like I was aware that Coach was on, but I you know, I can't even remember if I've ever actually even watched a full episode or two of those. I'm sure I have, but it's not something that culturally it's in my brain, and I don't have, you know, I don't have a lot of references to, I mean, other than the classics, like stuff that I, you know, Brady Bunch or Love American Style, and then later Seinfeld and those things, of course, I was, you know, right. I was writing about them at that point, but, you know, so a lot of them I just don't. And so, you know, whatever, I can't, you know, but I know that it's bad. I know that I know enough about it that it's bad. So,
yeah. I mean, it was a step up from your, you know, Single Guy and Union Square and all those.
Oh my God! Yeah,
quote, now you're unquote, now you're hit. See.
Yeah, I was still working then. Yeah, that's a way to bring those back up. Yeah, Jesus,
regurgitate those.
Yes, that's so bad.
Oh my God! I suppose I'm looking forward. Well, I don't know if looking forward is the word. I'm optimistic about the Muppets news that came out.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because, you know, all the headlines are like, you know, oh, the Muppets are coming back with the co-creator of the Big Bang Theory. And you know, you read that and go, oh, no, no. But then I read the stories and went, oh, he started with Henson. He was there when Jim Henson was still alive.
Right.
And he co-wrote the memorial special, which is one of the other things that made me cry, oddly mm-hmm. enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, all right, this is someone who knows the Muppets, and maybe it'll be better than the recent movies. Because
right.
I didn't care much for the recent movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never see movies, so there's that. But yeah, I'm a Muppets fan, so that news, I had forgotten about that. That news was met well for me. So it's like, you know what? Every day you wake up, there's something that's redone, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We're out of ideas.
Yeah.
In television.
That's the thing that pisses me off as a writer, because, you know, I'm sitting out here in the middle of Indiana going, you know, we have other ideas, guys. They don't all have to be teams of FBI forensic experts.
It's Hello. Really, it's really a rut, and it's kind of depressing. And when you see a breakout, any kind of, whether it's Mad Men or Orange is the New Black, any kind of format that seems different, like you've never seen before, people really take to it. And
right.
that's because we're just, especially by the networks, I mean, no surprise there, we're sort of fed the same thing over and over again.
Right. Well, you know, my kids were both sad when Parks and Recreation ended, because here's a show about Indiana. And I have to say, it gets Indiana. That's I live in Pawnee and I need to get out. But, you know, I was thinking back. I was like, all right, I remember when the schedule, you know, like CBS in the late 70s, you had shows set in Phoenix and Indianapolis and Chicago and, you know, and you had different shows and you had different characters. And now, like, every show on CBS is essentially a team solving crime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's the same kind of crime and it's the same tone. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a spinoff of another one. It's, you know, Scorpion is...
I know where you're trying to do. You're trying to get me to talk about CSI. So it's not going to happen.
But someone started a fire over the internet. I see those ads where it's like, you know, the poll quote is Patricia Arquette and cybercrime are a perfect combination. What? No.
Oh my God. Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Oh, hey, I'll tell you, speaking of ads and promos that made me laugh out loud. I watched an old Blacklist, old Blacklist last night, and it's so great because I, you know, my memory just always loses all the crappy shows that are now canceled. And it's so it was back on when Allegiance was still on.
Oh, wow.
Talking about Allegiance, which was the modern day Russian spies. It was like the new version of the Americans.
Yeah.
And you know, that show was like, oh, it's dead. It's totally dead now. But I love it when one of the promos said, critics have pledged their allegiance. I was like, oh, no, check. Hold on a second. No, they didn't.
Oh, yeah, so. I love paying attention and going, all right, because, I mean, I've been reading a lot of you guys and following you guys for years. So, you know, I know when you like a show. And so when they're like, you know, critics said this. And I go, which ones?
Yeah,
name
which
them.
Ones?
Show
name
me.
Them. Yeah, don't pull that movie thing on us where it's like Joe Johnson from the movie sofa in my bedroom. No. Yeah, I gotta have a name. I gotta have an outlet. It's gotta be a real outlet that I can recognize. Show me that.
You see, like the pull quote is, "This show is a sure bet," and in tiny print, it's the cancellation bear. And you go, wait, that's not quite right.
Yeah, that's not legit. Oh my God. Speaking of a new show, by the way, I got one for you.
All right.
I got one for you. I think you're aware of this I did my review already.
Okay.
It's not gonna. It won't be out until the next next week's magazine. We're probably not gonna put it online until next Tuesday. But I did watch the much anticipated for some people Daredevil.
Ah, that's a high fast one right over the incomparable listener's plate.
Mm-hmm. And I you know, you saw some of the tweets I put out, and it's funny. It's like I know people really are looking forward to this, and I was really, and I had to sort of say I did it. I not only did it in the tweets I did, but I even put it in my story where I was like, you know what, I'm not really, I don't come from the comic book world, and so I didn't read them, so I'm at a disadvantage in some ways in the modern times. But at the same time, it is a TV show, and you're going to bring a lot of people to it who haven't seen the read the comics or haven't read the source material.
Right.
And you have to have a good show. So, and as I said in my review, there's plenty of them that are on the air now. I like them for what they do. Some of them I don't like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know. But I liked Agent Carter. I like Arrow and The Flash. So it's like you take them as they come. But I thought that Daredevil, based on all the hype, and I knew nothing about it, was going to be something a little bit better. And I got to tell you, I was kind of disappointed. Really, in fact, really disappointed if I'm going to give up the ghost there. And it's because I can't get past the fact that, like, he doesn't really kind of have a lot of great powers. You know, I know he's a normal person, but look, let's cut to the chase, David. And that's like, he seemed like a very low rent Batman to me.
Yeah.
And then, and he's blind. And to me, it was like the elephant in the room. Like, I guess if you know where I'm going on this, if you've read the comics and you have this whole trajectory and you've got all this stuff, you kind of like, okay, he's got all these other heightened skills, and the comic can sort of paint him in fights and stuff. But when you actually put it on the screen, and he does 90% of his fights in close quarters, and he's great at martial arts, and he can fight like nobody's business. That's a really old school world to live in. Fisticuffs, as I mocked in my review, because the elephant in the room is you could kind of shoot this guy dead pretty quick. I mean, I had a hard time getting around that. I got to tell you, like, just that literally was the rock I couldn't get around. Like, okay, so he's going to bust into this one room in this one episode where there's these six Russian thugs who are, you know, conceivably armed to the hilt, and yet they all decide to come out and box him. Interesting. Okay.
It's fair. That's it.
Yeah, let's make it fair. There's a blind guy wearing, as I said in my review, like, I think some kind of smart wool. That's his suit. He's got like a smart, he's like wick, something that wicks really well. You know, that's his protection. He's got no bat suit. He's got like a wicking smart wool suit with a black beanie on his head. And as I think I definitely pointed out in my review, I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, you know, that's a 28 to 30 inch waist there, my friend. You are very light. You're not striking fear in me. So I'm just going to be 10 feet over here and bang, bang, bang. I just shot you dead.
Yeah.
Crazy person. So, and of course that doesn't happen. You wouldn't have a show if that happened. So I can't get past that.
Yeah. It's a character I had never really known. Mm-hmm. I mean, I I've got a shelf of comic book and graphic novels that are, you know, 4 feet from me as I talk. Mm-hmm. And I have a fair number of Daredevil books because I got into it later. One of my theater friends said, oh, Daredevil was my guy when I was growing up. You should read him. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right. I was always a DC fan. So right. I was, you know, Batman and all that. I was never a Marvel fan. And that's kind of flipped in the last few years, which has been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got it. You know, I've got about six or seven Daredevil books here. And, you know, you can sort of let it go in the books. Because it's not moving, right?
Right.
It's very quick, and you go, oh, well, he's super fast. That's it. Oh, mm-hmm. he's going to hit him before the guy takes out his gun. Oh, he surprises the guy with the gun, or, you know, whatever. And when you're watching it in motion, I mean, that was part of the problem with the Ben Affleck movie, is it just seemed ridiculous. Well, that and all of a sudden he would turn totally CGI for a few minutes, and that was not very good.
Okay, well, so clearly I didn't see that one.
Yeah, don't do it. Save yourself. And I mean, I've been curious to see how they do this because, I keep trying with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I just can't do it. I don't care.
Right.
I don't care about anything in that show.
Right.
And I appreciate the work they're doing. I appreciate the actors. I like a lot of the actors. And I'm just like, no. And even Agent Carter, I watched the first one. Mm-hmm. And that's one that's right in my wheelhouse. It's, you know, late 40s.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. and all of that stuff. And, you know, this is the kind of thing I write, mm-hmm. you know. And I liked it. And I never came back for episode two. I just, life is too short. I have other things.
Yeah.
Right? And I love her. She's fantastic.
She was great. So. And for me, that was a short enough one,
right.
And it was plausible enough where, to me, it was like a well-executed TV show where I got entertainment value, I got a really interesting character, I got a woman, There was interesting backstory. It's set in a time that's not present time, so it's got this historic element. All the things that I liked about it had it going for it, but I'm not finding any of that in Daredevil. And I really think, you know, you make a good point too. It's like we're moving, you know, and that really is it. The books can hide that, yeah. And you can't hide it in this. And then the other thing that I pointed out in the review is that, you know, the show is, it's kind of shockingly violent, and you can really give me a lot of violence. I'm really unaffected by it. It is shockingly violent to the point where it's blood porn. And I noticed that it was Stephen S. DeKnight, I guess is who it is. And that's, you know, he's from Spartacus, which is the total blood porn thing. So that's why that's there. Although thank God there's no slow motion blood porn in this one. It's just all over the place. But I don't think you can go the hyper violent route and then at the same time, like, have us believe everything is so hyper violent in Hell's Kitchen in New York. And then we're going to roll it back to like 60s era Batman television where we're just going to punch each other.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work. So that to me is literally a fatal flaw of the show.
That's a shame.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. I love The Flash. I mean, I wasn't even going to watch it because I was there. Well, how much time do I have? I have things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger son got into it right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and seeing everybody saying, oh, Flash, you got to watch Flash. And so we watched the pilot and he fell in love with it. And then it's been appointment television. We don't make it up. We don't time shift. We watch it Tuesday at 8 so that nobody can spoil it for him.
Good.
And then, you know, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter, we never got around to because then, it's time to get ready for bed. And we do the whole bedtime routine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, put that on at 8.
Mm-hmm.
But,
there's too much. There's too much of it out there.
And I'm burning out on them. And I like comic books.
Right. There's just so much. I mean, my thing was like, I think TV can absorb all of these ones, unlike film. I really think that the comic books and superheroes and stuff have kind of really put a damper on the film season. I think that's, a lot of films can't get made because they're not going to do well. And these are the ones that obviously do well. I mean, you have to have a big opening weekend, so you got to blow shit up. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
And sort of like action stuff works perfectly well at the box office, whereas, you know, a lot of the other stuff that got all the award attention didn't get a whole lot of box office. And I think that's emblematic of how the industry is failing. But television, we have a lot of other choices. You know, it's like just because Daredevil and there's going to be three other of these street fighting vigilantes that Marvel's going to put out. I mean, that's not going to put a damper on the T. It's not going to say, oh, we've got too much superheroes. We have a lot, but we have so many other things.
Right.
It'll survive. But that's because our industry is able to, I think, absorb that better than film.
Okay. Shall we go to some listener feedback?
Sure, let's do that.
All right, because I was looking at the clock and going, yeah, it's about time.
All right, let's do it.
All right. We've got one from Athrin in the she has two 415 and 716.
Yes, she was a 415 original. So you can never shake that, right? I mean, that's as we say, area code of record. Of course, you're out there. What's your area code again, David? You said at the beginning
812.
812. Okay, all right.
But it's funny. I grew up in Florida in the 813.
Really?
So, go figure.
You're going backwards, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Someday 415.
What does Athrin have to say?
She says, I was in Toronto the last weekend, and I had to detour around filming for a Minority Report TV series. Do you know much about it?
Huh. I did hear about that. But again, I'm terrible for this because, you know, THR is perfect for this. You would think, this is great, you would think that I would be in the perfect position to have all of this information to feed out to people. But here's what happens. I work at THR, and they have billions and billions of little bits of this information, and I look at it and I think, tell me later. Man. Don't want to know. cannot absorb it. No bandwidth. It's like I'm always about what is in front of me. What actually has been made, has been shot, has been accepted onto the schedule and is now in front of me in a final version. That's my life. And so, like, if you're shooting a Minority Report TV show, you know, good. I love the movie, so I'd love to see it
in a few months.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I'm sure another year. But yeah, no, I hear it's out there, but me paying attention to those things, I'm just the wrong person.
I know a little bit about it, that it's it's for Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main reason that Larry Wilmore's show wound up being called The Nightly Show. Because originally that was going to be The Minority
Report. Oh, The Minority Report. Yes. Yeah. Good. Wait. That's right. You're totally flogging my memory now. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See? Fake Jason. Yes.
Yeah, right. Oh, we probably didn't even properly say poor Jason. He'll be back. He'll be back next week. He's had a good run over in Ireland right now. He had a good
Lord.
European vacation, basically.
Yeah, he had to do a couple of businessy things, like, you know, podcasting, because I don't think he goes a day without podcasting now.
No, he has to. Yeah, he's an addict.
Or else he just sort of withers.
Right.
But
he probably does one in his room. One that's never recorded.
Just sort of this rambling James Joycean.
Yes, exactly.
Stream of consciousness thing.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a sad man. All right. Who else is up?
All right. We have Dean in the 707, close to heaven, quote unquote.
Oh, nice. That's the 707, close to heaven. You know, anytime there's a wine country reference, I'm all about that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what you're saying, Tim, when you say talk shows are marathons rather than sprints. See, I told you it was going to come back. And you can't judge much by the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I was around for the premiere of the Chevy Chase talk show, and it was clearly DOA.
Yes.
One of the great TV disasters. I was wondering, Tim, and this is a not a thing, if you could use, quote, cyber time travel technology, trademark CBS, what great TV Hindenburgs would you send Jason back to view?
Ooh, there are so many.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because I always use that. I always use the sports analogy. You know, they say that to be a great cornerback in the NFL, you have to have no memory, right? Because you're going to get burned, right? I mean, you have so many great quarterbacks, you know, you're going to get burned and it's going to. You're going to have great coverage, and they're still going to catch it and get a touchdown. You just got to let it go. You got to forget it. So, like, that's my philosophy when I get all these crappy-ass new shows, and I do get a lot of them. I just forget them. But you know what? There's been some spectacularly bad ones that poor Jason could go back and take a look at. But that would be kind of torture. I think what we need to do is we need to, like, when TV Talk Machine moves into the – a more traditional fall period. I think what we'll do is I'll make sure that Jason has a handful of stuff that hasn't been on the air yet. And we'll get his take and we'll compare takes and I can torture him. You know, if he was here right now, I would probably say, hey, dude, can you watch American Odyssey? Cause I don't want to do it. So that's good.
I'm totally up for torture anytime.
Yes. We'll have to put some your way as well.
You know, I was joking on Twitter, but I would totally, a podcast called Not a Thing. I'm there. I was thinking about, I mean, there are some shows, like, I remember hearing about Jackie Gleason one fall did a game show called You're in the Picture, and the second week came back, it was just him sitting in a chair on a stage apologizing, saying that show was horrible, and then he came back and just did his regular variety show.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I'd love to see that.
Yeah, know? That'd be good. I would like for a lot of shows to come back and say, that was horrible.
and now the one, and I know Jason's talked about it before, that Steve Carell always brings up this review from the TV website of Over the Top. And I got the full story last summer in San Diego with him. So I was curious a couple of months ago. And the whole pilot episode is on YouTube in pieces.
Really?
And I thought, all right, I'll give it a shot.
Were you thinking, how bad could this be?
Yeah. I couldn't finish it. It's only, you know, 22 minutes. I couldn't finish it. You know, and Carell, I mean, God bless him. He's doing, like, second-rate, bulky Bartakamoos. And you think, okay, you know, he's being told to do that, and he's new guy on the scene. You know, he's going to do what the producers and the directors tell him. Man, I mean, it was, that review is not hyperbole.
Right. So imagine if that had stuck, if that show had stuck around. God. I mean, there's a lot of shows where I'm sure actors are like, you know what? It's a good thing that one was a miss. Good thing that one did not land, because I would be stuck in this god awful vehicle for 5 seasons.
Yeah.
Or how many? I mean, look at it. You look at this is very modern times. I mean, when Will Arnett was in The Millers, and you know, I love the guy, and he's had some misses on TV after Arrested Development, and he's just not had the right vehicle. But he desperately really wanted a show that was a hit. And generally what happens is eventually you will go to CBS and you'll make that show. And my thing is, like, you know, be careful what you wish for, because your crowd, the one that adores you, will not watch that show. And so he got some money and he got a paycheck, but it lasted, it barely got renewed for a second season, and then canceled in the middle of that second season, I think. I can't remember, but
A couple of episodes in.
Yeah, it's
after adding Sean Hayes, which, you know.
Oh my God. See, that improved it. Right. Oh my God. Now I'm having a Sean Hayes flashback to Sean Hayes' show. Why would you do that?
I'm sorry.
Why do you lash out?
That was
that is brutal. Remember Sean Hayes' news this season. Oh God, it was terrible.
Yeah. I liked the Michael J. Fox show. That was not awful.
No, it was not awful. But it just
was not good, but it was not awful.
No, and there were really interesting elements to why that show did not work. But yeah, it was a good try, and he's a very likable character, and funny, and I think he does really well when he does his you know, cameos or extended cameos in certain arcs. He's been really good in, but yeah, that one just didn't work.
Yeah. That's like, speaking of non-offensive and revivals, I was watching The Odd Couple last night, and you know, it's fine.
Yeah. I'm happy for those guys.
Yeah. I kind of want Thomas Lennon to ease back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little too stylized for it, I think. Cause there were things that made me laugh last night.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just, you know, wonderfully natural moments. And then it goes back to being, you know, oh, yes, we're a sitcom.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, well, you have to be hyper aware of that on CBS, I think.
Yes. So,
but, you know, I'm happy for him. He's finally got something where it's taken advantage of him.
Yeah.
He's pulling in good sitcom money, you know, and so I'm happy for the both of them. That's always good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know what? You get your money, you get your fame, and your how many people are watching it, and your renewals. And then, you know, like, I'll see your other work, or I'll go watch your old work, or do a movie and I'll watch you in that. I mean, there's enough to go around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you got to have shows that are cannon fodder or yes. Just, you know, white noise.
Yeah.
It happens.
I mean, it does.
NCIS is a hit. It's fine. It's inoffensive. I leave it on sometimes.
Yeah.
Do I watch it? No. Do I follow the mythology? No. Although I would maintain,
like to unearth somebody who really knows everything about it. Yes. Like, they just were in a cave, and they were looking at this like I look at Mad Men, you know. And they're like, "Oh yeah, let me tell you something about this episode in the 11th season."
Oh
when they went to, I would love that person.
I mean,
like
when
a cave
when,
person
when they announced NCIS New Orleans, and you know, and all summer long they had all those ads where, I mean, the one line of dialogue is Scott Bakula going, "We gonna have a good time."
Yeah.
And I went, oh no. And I maintain that show would have been so much better if it had been him and a cartoon alligator walking on his hind feet who was always hungry, and then they would solve crimes. You know,
yeah.
Atchafalaya Jones and Lafayette Jackson. And they go off and solve crime.
That's perfect.
See?
I remember when that was announced, and my friend Dave Walker, who works for the Times-Picayune, and has to do all things New Orleans. I think I just saw his soul collapse and be sucked through his body. It's like, oh yeah, buddy, you'll be watching that one.
We had Frank's Place. We had Treme, and now...
Yep. Now you got that.
And it's a hit. Oh, man. Well, I got one more.
Okay, let's do it.
This is from Thomas in the 812, and he happens to be in the next room.
Nice.
This would be my son.
I was going to say, I think I know the 812 now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And, you know, he's like, hey, you're going to be doing the thing with Tim, dude. Oh, I got a question. Okay.
I like that. That's nice.
And he's a listener. I mean, we fire up the podcasts on the Apple TV. You know, it's easy.
That poor kid.
Yeah, I know. I know. But he was wondering. He got
Thomas.
Hooked. Thomas got hooked on the Great British Bake Off, or as PBS insists on calling it, the Great British Baking Show. Because I guess we don't understand what a bake-off is. We're not that smart. And, you know, it's the kind of show he would never have chosen to watch. He would never sit down and say, I'm going to watch this.
Right.
And, I mean, he likes cooking shows. He grew up watching Food Network more than PBS. He was obsessed with Alton Brown. So, you know, okay, kind of makes sense.
Right.
And, but, I mean, he really got into this, and we watched the whole run of it. So he was wondering, are there shows that you've watched, not for review, not that you would necessarily have been, like, excited for weeks and weeks in advance. Are there shows you've watched like that where you just got hooked in spite of yourself?
Ooh, that's very solid. That is a very good question. Shows that I got hooked despite myself. Yeah, you know, well, it's I'm trying to differentiate this question between sort of, the the where you're kind of embarrassed for a show, but you do watch it. I don't know if I have any of those. I mean, I've already freely admitted that I loved Alf, so I think I'm good. I'm good for that forever. But you know what? For example, there were shows that I didn't expect to like and really like, and one of them is How It's Made. I could literally watch a 24-hour bonanza of those. What other one? You know, in the realm of things where you're not expecting to like it, I think that there's generally, I generally go towards things like stuff that happens on sports shows. So I'll be watching, I'll find myself watching Australian rules football, and then going now I'm a huge soccer fan now, so I'll be in BN Sports watching their studio bits, and I'm just like, I'm totally into it. I didn't expect to like those. But as far as like scripted shows that are on that I normally probably wouldn't be a fan of that I'm now am kind of shockingly a good fan of, I would say the two that stand out right now are and it's, to me, it's fresh in my mind because it was The Blacklist and Elementary. And those are really not my kind of shows. And I'm very much a proponent of not having enough time in the world to watch shows that aren't, you know, piling up and all this great stuff. But yeah, those two, those are like comfort food for me. I'll watch those. Also Person of Interest. And they're just things that, like, they just exist, but I probably wouldn't keep watching them. And that's one of the downfalls of this job, by the way, is that I'll start watching something and I'll get 4 or 5 episodes in it for a review. And I'll think, you know, that's pretty good. I'll make a note that I'll record that. And then you look at your DVR and you're like, oh, wow, 17 hours of that? I'm sorry. I can't do that. I don't have 17 hours left, you know? So there are stuff that I actually like that fall by the wayside. But those two shows, I will go back and watch. And like, again, like I watched the two. I looked and I said, oh, I've got 6 or 7 Blacklists. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of like a little present. And trust me, I've got a lot of stuff sitting here, David. I've got unwatched Game of Thrones.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, I got stuff I can watch, right?
But you have to think about those things.
Yes. You know, and I have to think about them. And I could be rewatching, you know, Mad Men if I wanted to. But no, I ended up watching two of those things, and I thought, yeah, I said that feeds my need for that. And the same thing with Elementary and Person of Interest. Not shows that I would normally follow, but I keep them on the DVR and I watch as much as I can.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll put on some of the, you know, the old TV on the extra digital channels, and you know, so I finally showed my kids Magnum PI last year. And Thomas is actually unintentionally named for Magnum PI. It was an accident. That's a whole story for later. And but, you know, he'd heard about it and he's seen the Rockford Files, and he gets through, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks of Magnum P.I. and he goes, eh, it's cute. It's no Rockford. And I went, damn, son.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
that's
you're,
savvy,
you're 30
though.
Years late, but
yeah,
you're on it.
Yep. It's no Rockford, but yeah.
But it's fun. You know, I've seen most of Magnum, I don't know how many times, or Star Trek, and I'll watch them again because I, you know, I just enjoy it. It's comfortable.
Yeah, I think there's a comfort food element to some of this. You know, you have to have your things and that make you feel good. and, you know, for me, it's sometimes just sitting down and watching like a Sports Center. Sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I like this. I haven't watched this in a really long time. Let's do this. Or, you know, now I think I've told you this before. I watched for my sports. I just go to the source now. So now that baseball season's starting, I'll be over on MLB channel watching their, you know, shows. And those things go on forever. And during the football season, I was all over NFL Network. And I could watch all the ones that they decided to manufacture, which was a lot. They're like, yeah, well, I have a first kickoff in the morning. Oh, yeah, I'll watch that. so yeah, some of it's just comfort food and stuff that, and sometimes you don't want to think. Like when I sit right. down to watch Game of Thrones, which I'll do this weekend, I'm gonna be focused entirely on the four or how many episodes they sent. But when I watch my comfort shows, I can be checking Twitter and doing stuff at the same time. So it's good.
Yeah. What was I just gonna say? Oh, I still have somewhere a VHS tape. I mean, because I got rid of most of the VHS that I still had. You know, like, stuff you recorded off the TV.
Sure.
But I still have one that has, like, the Divine Comedy episode of Saint Elsewhere and the black and white Magnum P.I. and, I don't know, there's a couple of things. And it has an episode of Sports Center back when Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick were still doing it, so it was the big show.
Oh, nice, yes.
And it was one of those where Dan couldn't make it, and they didn't have anyone to fill in, so Keith put on the fake mustache and goatee and did half the show as evil Keith, and they edited it all together. And it was brilliant, and it's ridiculous.
Right.
But it worked, and, right. and I was like, I'm keeping that.
Yeah, there are days when you can, there are some times when you can just pull stuff like that off. Well, he's very talented, too, so, you know. But, yeah, you're crazy, by the way. You're crazy to I could never watch all that stuff. I look at the DVDs I have in my house. I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to watch those. Never going to go back and watch those.
Oh, I've got shelves of stuff that I should get rid of. Because, yeah, you know. I mean, just the stuff I've put on my Netflix queue and my Hulu and, you know, all that. Dude, I'm not going to get to all of that.
No, like I said, it's time. You need to do like a map.
Yeah,
you know, time map. See what time in your life that you have left. You got to do a spreadsheet. You're going to be shocked, David.
Yeah, and I mean, we're trying to sort of winnow down to say, all right, these are things that the kids should know, right? You know, it's like the kids should know Monty Python and Fawlty Towers and the good Star Treks, and maybe they'll watch Voyager. And, no. I didn't. I'm still scarred by watching one for a random Trek episode. Ugh. But anyway,
there it is.
Speaking awesome. Of time management,
yes.
So
well, this was good. I'm happy you sat in. I'm happy that you got in. We got a little different voice on there.
I'm here anytime.
We were able to make fun of Jason.
Oh, that's always fun.
So go give us the sign off, and then we'll have Jason come. And hopefully he won't cut out all the parts where I mocked him.
Well, no, I'll keep the pristine copy.
Excellent.
Because, you know, people will want to re-listen to this 20 years from now.
Mike, right.
So, yeah, so you can reach everybody online on Twitter. You can reach Tim at Bastard Machine.
Yay.
And you can reach Jason at Jay Snell. And you can reach me at DLore, L-O-E-H-R. And you can go to the Facebook page for the TV Talk Machine. And let's see what else.
Because we'll take your questions.
That's right. That's right. You know? Most of the feedback comes from Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, send us questions. I like that. And props to Thomas for a very good question, by the way.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere. I went, ooh,
mm-hmm.
That's
very
my boy.
Good.
So anyway, So yeah, it was great fun. I'm happy to be the break glass emergency guest.
Yes, and thank you for keeping the streak going. We wanted to make sure we kept the streak alive.
That's right.
Because otherwise, you know, if I go a week and I don't do it, it's over.
Yep, it's done.
All I need is an excuse to take that hour and use it somewhere else.
So, we've taken our hour. Let's close up the mailbag and all the other sign-off things you want to do.
All right. Well, thanks, David. Thanks for pitching in.
Hey, thanks for having me.